All right, well, let me invite you this morning to head toward the book of Numbers, Sefer Bamidbar. We continue working our way through the Torah, the first five books of our Bibles, what we call the Jesus backstory. And today we come to number 36, the 36th of the 54 parshiot that comprise the Torah. And that is Parsha Beha Loteha. Picks up at chapter 8, so it's Numbers 8 and runs through the end of chapter 12. And begins like so many others, Vayedaber Adonai el Moshe l'amor, and said Yahweh to Moses, saying, Daber el Aharon ve'amarta elav, speak to Aaron and say to him. So there's lots of speaking and lots of saying going on. Beha Loteha translates as when you set up. It is the name of our parsha this morning. Beha Loteha, when you set up. And then by way of summary, this parsha first describes the menorah, the candelabra, followed by the purification process for the Levites, followed by instructions regarding the Passover. And then at that point, they head out. They break camp, and they head out into the wilderness. The Israelites, the people of Israel, head out into the wilderness, Bamidbar or Bamidbar, either way is fine, but they head out into the wilderness, and that is where the rest of the parsha takes place. And with that, there comes lots of complaining. So the rest of the parsha is all about complaining. First, it's the people of Israel complaining against God. And then it's Aaron and Miriam complaining against Moses. And it's that complaint that I want to kind of land on today, mostly because it really continues from the text last week, Parsha Naso, right, where we read Naso et Rosh, right? That idea that each one, even the leper, right, the outcast, the outcast among outcasts, even that one is equally infinitely valuable. And we see that same kind of idea here today, noting it picks up then in chapter 12 in the opening line. We read, Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite. Now there is a massive amount of study on this one verse, regarding this one verse, centering on just who is this Cushite woman. Quite a bit of scholarship would suggest to us that it is Zipporah, who we met in Exodus, Zipporah being a daughter of one of the daughters of the priest of Midian, and was given to Moses to be his wife. But the other much of scholarship sees all kinds of problems with that, not the least of which is that Cush refers to either the land of, we believe, the land of Sudan, more likely Ethiopia, and the land down south from there. And so is clearly not the land of Midian. In fact, nowhere is there any confusion about that, not in the Bible, not in historical documents. So we could say, well, perhaps this is Zipporah. I think more likely it's not. But either way, as the Rabbi Alex Kress notes, either way, the argument is clear. The non-Israelite woman is an outsider, looks different, and is not worthy of marrying into our exclusive club. Whether it is her religion, skin color, or some other supposed fault, her otherness is too much for Miriam and Aaron to countenance. And so Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite. And then if we drop down to verse 9, we read, the anger of the Lord burned against them. When the cloud lifted from above the tent, Miriam's skin was leprous. It became as white as snow. Aaron turned toward her and saw that she had a defiling skin disease. And he said to Moses, please, my Lord, I ask you not to hold against us the sin we have so foolishly committed. Again from Rabbi Kress, he says, God, irate that they would criticize Moses, descends upon Aaron and Miriam in a cloud. When the cloud departs, Miriam is stricken with Zerat, the scaly skin ailment associated with punishment for slander, or what you might remember we talked about some time ago, was back in Genesis 37, Lashon Hara, was back in Parsha Vayeshev. He goes on, the Torah tells us that Miriam was shut out of the camp for 7 days, and the people did not march on until Miriam was readmitted. In other words, Miriam was forced outside the very boundaries she was attempting to erect and enforce. To recover from the illness brought on by her actions and also for the community to move on, Miriam, not Moses or his wife, had to leave the community. This is a lesson, he says, in radical inclusivity. A radical inclusivity, as we saw last week, again, Naso et Rosh, right? The outcast of outcasts, right? Even that one is equally, infinitely valued. And in the same way today, the outsider, this radical inclusivity, right? The outsider, the one that doesn't fit in, right? The one with all of their otherness. And it's that idea that flows then into and through the life and teachings of Jesus, reflected to us in the Gospels. Today, last week it was Matthew. Today we're going to go to the Gospel of Mark. Mark chapter 11, if you're grabbing a pew Bible, 7:17. Mark chapter 11 and verse 12, we pick up here. It says, they, meaning Jesus and his disciples, are heading out of Bethany. Jesus is hungry here. In verse 13, seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, he, Jesus, went to find out if it had any fruit. A couple of things about fig trees and leaves, in a general sense, noting that after the harvest, the branches of a fig tree would begin to sprout these buds that after the winter then would develop into what in Hebrew are called pagim, also called bigurah in Hosea, referring to or meaning early fruit. And then soon after, the tree would begin to sprout and produce leaves. Meaning, as the scholar James Edwards puts it, once a fig tree is in leaf, one therefore expects to find branches loaded with pagim in various stages of maturation. And so again, Jesus here, it says he's hungry, a fig tree in leaf. He heads over to check it out, see if there's some kind of fruit on it. When he reached it, he found nothing but leaves because it says it was not the season for figs, which is, again, one of those verses that has a massive amount of study. It's confusing. In fact, a number of scholars say that Jesus here is just simply being vindictive and irrational, which to me doesn't really help our understanding, and I don't see Jesus being vindictive and irrational. Another and more likely consideration would be that we would distinguish between what is mature fruit that ripens later, what is called ta'anim, and distinguish that from what is pagim, again, what means early fruit. And as Edwards puts it, it was, of course, not the season for figs, but it was for pagim. It is a tree with the signs of fruit, but with no fruit. And so with that in mind, if we kind of step back for a moment, the kind of the symbolism here, right? It says it's not the season for figs, and yet here the tree itself, by showing its leaves, is in a sense proclaiming itself to be fruitful. Verse 14, then he said to the tree, may no one ever eat fruit from you again. And his disciples heard him say it. Now with that in mind, Mark here transitions. He interpolates, he interjects another story into the midst of this story. And so he leaves the fig tree and he does what scholars call a Mark and sandwich, where he sandwiches in one story into the midst of another. And so we now move into the middle of the sandwich. The idea is that both stories kind of flavor one another. Verse 15, on reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered into the temple courts, or entered the temple courts, and began driving out those who were buying and selling there. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves, and would not allow anyone to carry merchandise through the temple courts. So here it is, they've left the fig tree, they're back to Jerusalem. More specifically, they're here at the temple. Keeping in mind, the temple is the heart of worship, right? It's the place of God's presence. But that is not what Jesus finds, right? We read about those who are buying and selling, right? So it says he overturns the tables of the money changers, benches of those selling doves. doesn't allow anyone to carry merchandise through these temple courts. So the temple is massive. The outermost division is called the Court of the Gentiles. It's the largest area, hundreds of yards by hundreds of yards, 35 acres about, 40 acres or so. And it was in this larger court then, the scholar Edwards, he says, was a virtual stock market of animal dealers and money changers for the many pilgrims, especially at festivals to the temple. And so it's in this court of Gentiles then that this scene takes place. And Jesus, it says, he goes into the court, kicks people out, turning over tables and benches. In effect, he is kicking out those who are using the temple for a profit, noting that in large part, in that day, there were these sacrifices that were being made. And you might remember back from Leviticus, there's all kinds of offerings. There's burnt offerings and sin offerings and guilt offerings, and there's peace offerings, right? Offered as a form of worship, offered to offer my devotion. It signifies one's devotion to God. And part of that is mentioned here, doves, right? Doves are mentioned from the scholar Witherington, Ben Witherington. Doves were usually the one item the poor could afford to buy to make an offering, and were used for the purification. This is interesting. Doves were usually the one item the poor could afford to buy to make an offering, and were used, it says, for the purification of women. Interesting. And the cleansing of lepers, which I think is another interesting. So we can think of the Cushite woman. We can think of the leper, right? The outcast of outcasts. We can think of the outsider. Jesus' attack on those selling doves could be seen then as an attack on those gouging the poor. I would say as an attack on those that are gouging the outcast, on those that are gouging the outsider. And so Jesus, his disciples with him, they go into this court, and not only do they start turning over tables and benches and kicking people out, we then read from verse 17, "And as he taught them, he said, 'Is it not written, My house will be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it a den of robbers.'" And it's that line that is really at the heart of this passage, and is also really at the very center of the Parsha, Parsha Beha Loteha. That "my house will be called a house of prayer for all nations" is actually a quote from Isaiah 56. What the scholar Garland writes contains God's promise of blessing for all who might think they are excluded from God's salvation. And here it says the foreigner, and again we can think the Cushite, who has joined herself to the people. And then interesting, it says the outcasts of Israel, the outcasts among outcasts. He goes on to say most assumed that Isaiah 56 spoke of some distant future, but Jesus expects it to be fulfilled now. And juxtaposed against that, then, Jesus references this den of robbers. Now, we need to remember here, again, that in that day, not everyone had a Bible. They didn't open it and read it, and they didn't cross-reference it. Right? Even the Hebrew scrolls, there were no chapters and verses. And so the way to let somebody know about a passage of Scripture, you would quote a particular line, kind of like we do each week with the Parshiot. And so when Jesus speaks here of a house of prayer for all nations, right, the religious elite, they would have known, and it would have led them to Isaiah 56. That would have come to mind. And in the same way, then, when we read Den of Robbers, he is taking them now to Jeremiah 7 and verse 3, which reads, "This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says, Reform your ways and your actions, and I will let you live in this place. Do not trust in deceptive words and say, 'This is the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord.' If you really change your ways and your actions," right? And so here he's saying, reform your ways, reform your actions, change your ways, change your actions. And what does that look like? He says, and deal with each other justly, and deal with each other justly. And then what does he say? If you do not oppress the outsider, right, the one who doesn't fit in, right, the one with all of their otherness, whatever that otherness might be. It goes on, the fatherless or the widow, "and do not shed innocent blood in this place, and if you do not follow other gods to your own harm, then I will let you live in this place." Verse 11, "has this house which bears my name become a den of robbers to you. And so far more than a couple of simple statements about prayer and nations and dens and robbers. In effect here, Jesus says, you have turned what God intended to be a blessing for all. You have turned what God intended to be a blessing for the outcast and for the outsider, and you have made it into a place of injustice and oppression. Which is why then, he goes on, the chief priests and the teachers of the law heard this and began looking for a way to kill him. Right? For they feared him because the whole crowd was amazed. That can be translated as astounded. They're amazed, they're astounded at his teaching. And then verse 19, we come back to that first story. When evening came, Jesus and his disciples went out of the city. In the morning as they went along, they saw the fig tree withered from the roots. Peter remembered and said to Jesus, Rabbi, look, the fig tree you cursed has withered. Again, what was to be a house of radical inclusivity, what God intended to be a blessing, a house of radical inclusivity, right? Naso et Rosh, right? To lift the head of, right? Each one equally, infinitely valuable. For the outcast among outcasts, and yes, for the outsider, the one that doesn't fit in, the one with all of their otherness, whatever that otherness is. And what was to be a house of radical inclusivity, Jesus says, it's now a den of injustice and oppression. And so I wonder, what about us? What about us? And we can even kind of think back a few weeks ago, not just that we hear, but right, we hear and we do. Right? We hear and we do. And so really then inviting us, I think this parsha is inviting us to not only to reflect, but then maybe even to act. Maybe we can ask and think about, are you and me living as a house of prayer for all nations? Are we living as a house of prayer? And I don't mean the church as a building, and I don't mean the church as an institution. I mean the church as you and me, as the body of Christ, as a people gathered. Are we living as a house of prayer for all nations, right? What Jesus says is a place of radical inclusivity. We could ask, do I create a space for the radical inclusivity of the other? Whatever that other might be. Again, as Rabbi Kress notes it here, be it religion, skin color, or he says some other supposed fault. Right? The otherness. Do I create a space for the radical inclusivity of the other? We could ask, do I welcome the outcast and the outsider in all of their otherness? Whatever that might be. You could ask, do those in my presence experience the reality of Isaiah 56? Right? What we're told is to be a place of blessing. A place where even the outcast and the outsider are valued, equally infinitely valued. And then with that, we could even think of Miriam and back to her being excluded from the community. Right, the boundaries that she was erecting, and we could ask, what boundaries am I erecting and enforcing that keep others out? What walls have I created that keep others from God's presence? And think again of Jeremiah 7, where it reads, if you really change your ways and your actions, right, deal with each other justly, if you do not oppress the foreigner, the fatherless, the widow. And with that, then we could ask, What ways and actions is God asking me to really change? And maybe to get at that, we could say, what person or group would I rather avoid? Who have I ignored, been indifferent toward? Who have I discounted? Right? What ways and actions is God asking me to really change? And as he taught them, it says, he said it, Is it not written, my house will be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it a den of robbers? By Adber Adonai El Moshe Lamor, Daber El Haron Ve'amarta Elav, speak to Aaron and say to him, Beha Loteha. What is this lesson in radical inclusivity?